Okay.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
How many of you were here last week? Okay, and me? The only reason why I ask this question is because the four sides that you have in front of you are really going to extend out into a number of shiurim. And I'm going to ask the permission of those who were here last week. I'm only going to briefly review what we said last week. We did have classes last week. As far as the camera was concerned, we talked about the... I think I asked for them to bring in more chairs. We had about 10 people, 13 people. In other words, the people who had seichel stayed home. It's still a little difficult around town, but well, that was it. We'll have something to tell our great-grandchildren. The storm of 13. I still remember. And I talked about a big storm then too.
Yes,
so I wanted to know that what was in the 90s was nothing compared to what we have now. This comes, the only thing that I can remember recollected in my memory is I still am though one of those who remembers the blizzard of 47.
Oh,
yes. The blizzard of 47 in New York. It was unbelievable, the amount of stuff. All right, 47, that's the last century, not two centuries ago. 47, okay. But this was the great blizzard, I mean.
Not the year 47.
Huh?
Not the year 47.
Not the year 47. 1947. All right, so I just want to go over... The shiur this week and most probably next week, which will be a continuation of what we have here, the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And what was it of all the strange things? There was something that I read that just in a flash, all of a sudden, I saw the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've been living with that greatness every day of my life. But sometimes you see things in a certain perspective. And here was the perspective. On the second side, it started with an article in the Jerusalem Post. I have to do this quickly, so I'm going to do it quickly. I said that last week too. And it took nearly the whole year. I know where I'm. I have to watch myself over there. This appeared 2 weeks ago in the Jerusalem Post when he was the Deputy Secretary of State and I was Director of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. I escorted Strobe Talbot through the museum. We paused at a letter that John J. McCloy wrote on August 14, 1944. John J. McCloy was an assistant secretary of war, and he wrote this letter on August 14, 1944 to the head of the Rescue Department of the World Jewish Congress. In that letter, McCloy responded to a request that certain installations and railroad centers at Auschwitz be bombed. The installations included the gas chambers, in which as many as 10,000 Jews were being killed every day. The railroad centers were the tracks that were bringing Jews to the gas chambers. McCloy rejected the request. No, we can't do it. He said that, quote, such an operation could be executed only by the diversion of considerable air support, essential to the success of our forces now engaged in decisive operations elsewhere and would not warrant the use of our resources. Our planes are being used elsewhere, and we need those planes to do the job that has to be done, and we cannot divert them from the costs just in order to bomb a few gas chambers in Russia. All right? There has been considerable opinion to the effect that such an effort, I can't even read it anymore. Such an effort, even if practicable, might provoke even more vindictive actions by the Germans. For heaven's sake! What more could they do? Oh, they're going to become more vindictive. The fact that American and British bombers are to smothering the Kishkis, they're not worried that that may provoke more vindictive measures from the Germans. But if they're going to bomb the rail lines to Auschwitz and the gas chambers, which are so dear and so precious to the Germans, it might... I'm not even reading. He's an idiot. He's the same. Not an idiot. He's a sinus. Oh, he's a sinus. Right, so I described last week that I went on a journey, and I think it's a fascinating journey even for you if you have any time. I want to know, who is this John J. McCloy? I found out more stuff since last week. Well, now the stuff about John J. McCloy. He was an extremely successful executive who held many important positions, despite the fact that he was... All right. Anyway, I even found out that in the 50s, end of the 40s and the 50s, he was the commissioner, the American commissioner for the American Quarter of Germany. And he ended up pardoning all the Nazi criminals from the Nuremberg trials. This John J. McCloy. What was it that shook me over here? Didn't somebody raise a cry for heaven's sake? Was there nobody in the War Department that said, McCloy, you crazy, people are being killed every day? Did anybody get up and speak? And then I thought, of Moshe Rabbeinu. Jews are enslaved. Egyptian taskmasters are beating Jews. And they're all silent. And one man stands up and takes action. That's courage. All of a sudden, as I saw Moshe Rabbeinu, they, what I call striking that first great blow for freedom. Vayetze Elechov, he went out to his brothers. Let's go back to number one. Vayivayonu Mahem, and it came to pass on those days, this is the last week's Sefer. But the same motion that last week's Sefer talks about, this week's Sefer talks about. And they're going to keep talking about him until the end of Torah. And they will be talking about him until the end of time. We want to take a closer look at Moshe Rabbeinu. In those days, Moshe grew up, and he went out to his brothers, and he saw their burdens, and he saw Ish Mitzri, Makeh Ish Ibni Me'echov, he saw an Egyptian striking a Hebrew from his brothers, and he turned here and there. Vayar, he saw Ki Ein Ish, there is no man, and we will see, according to many of the portion, it doesn't mean that he was looking around to make sure that nobody's going to see what he's going to do. He's looking around to see, is there anybody who cares about what's happening to the Jewish people? Are there Jewish people who care about what's happening to the Jews. There's nobody. And as we see the Netziv, we'll quote, B'mokum she'inish, what does the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos say? B'mokum she'inish, where there is no man, hishtabel liot ish, you have to be the ish. And he understood that. And he knows that with this one blow, he is placing himself in grave danger. The position of prominence, power, and prestige that he has in the house of Paro is finished. They will never tolerate anything of the sort. But it made no difference to him. There's a terrible injustice being done to his brothers. Moshe Rabbeinu was incapable of watching that injustice and remaining unaffected, do nothing. We also quoted last week something that I said some years ago, the end of benching. Nabergisi, Vigamza County, Velora Gisi, Sadik Nezov, Bizarro, Mevakishwafim. I was young and I grew older, and I never saw a tzaddik who was abandoned and his children are looking for bread. He never saw. What do you mean he never saw? There aren't tzaddikim who suffer. There aren't people who suffer hunger. What do you mean he never saw? So Rav Soloveitchik said, you have to understand the word ra'iti, lo ra'iti, I didn't see. And he says, if you want to understand that word, you have to take a look at what Esther says to Ahasuerus in the Megillah. I can't stand idly by v'ra'iti and to see the evil that will befall my people. The v'ra'iti means I can't see and do nothing. I'm compelled to act. V'ra'iti doesn't mean to see as an observer and a witness, but to see with intent to do something dynamic. Na'ra'iti, I was young, but Gamza County, V'lo ra'iti, I never simply looked and saw the pain of a tzaddik and did nothing. I was always moved to action. Moshe Rabbeinu here, Vayar, he's not just looking, he sees. And his seeing compels him to act. And that's what he does. But in all fairness, I have to say that my studies last week, looking to see if anybody reacted to John J. McCloy's wicked letter. So there was one person in the American government who sent him a long letter. We have the letter, you can see it on the internet. Somebody by the name of Benjamin Axon sent a letter to McCloy in which he said, no, I don't understand. The Germans, if you bomb the rail lines and the gas chambers, what's going to be top on the German agenda is going to be to rebuild them. They're going to have to take men, material from all sorts of other places in order to rebuild it. This is going to slow down the entire German war machinery. Precisely the opposite of what you say. This is going to help the war effort. And he keeps on saying, well, really very smart things. So it turns out that this Benjamin Axon had been grown up as a as a disciple of Zev Jabotinsky. What? Jabotinsky is the next block over? Right, okay. Okay. And he became even his secretary. Then he moved to the United States. Harvard, moved up in government. 1949, he went on Aliyah, and he became a judge in the Supreme Court of the State of Israel. But he wasn't Benjamin Axen anymore, he was Binyamin Axen. One fellow spoke up. How do you like that? Why did that warm the cockles of my heart? One person spoke up. A Jew, a plant in the American government. Anyway, Moshe Rabbeinu, let's look at that pasuk again by Yetzi Elecha. He went out to his brothers. We pointed out that Vayetze is a very strange word. It only appears in a few places in Chumash. What should have been said was Vayelech El Echov. He went to his brothers. Vayetze means something else. Vayetze means that he stepped out of his world and he knew that he's walking into a completely different world. Where do we have that? Where do we have that? Vayetze Yaakov mibe'er sheva vayelech Chorona. Yaakov left Beersheba and he went to Choron. He knows exactly what's happening. He leaves Beersheba, he's leaving home, family, what's familiar, what's comfortable. He's going off on an adventure that he doesn't know where it's going to end. He's leaving Eretz Yisrael. He's going out into a darkness of ghosts. Something is happening. He's moving from one world to another. On a simpler level, Vatetze Dina bat Leah. Dina, the daughter of Leah, went out. She went out to see the Benot Haaretz, the daughters of the land. She's moving into a society in the EU that's not her own. And she's going to get into trouble. And she does. Vayetze, he went out of his world, but for only one reason. El Echov. Because he wants to go to his brothers. What we are watching unfolding in these few psukim is the birth of a leader. He's ready to leave everything that he knows and everything that has given him all that he is. Drop it all for his brothers. By Yarbasiglotan, and he saw their suffering, but he looks at their suffering with one thought in mind. How can I relieve that suffering? And Rashi says, this is going to be important at some point in this year, whenever I get to it, I don't know, this week, next week, the third week, I don't know anymore. Rashi, Vayar, this is Lotan, Natan Einav Vilivo. He focused his eyes and his heart to be distressed over them. So another Rashi that says at one point that he cried. He cried about the pain of the Jewish people. He cried about the pain of the Jewish people. I don't want to shake you up, but it's going to come one of these days. I'm going to have to shake you up. In the diaries of Theodor Herzl, Theodor Herzl wrote for many years a diary. And every word, all of his biographers say that whatever he wrote in his diary was absolute truth. He was completely honest in his diary. And a number of times he says, today I cried over the plight or my fellow Jews in Russia. By the time of the Kishinev pogroms, but he was suffering years before. I know you're not supposed to hear nice words about Herzl. So I sent a letter. They'll never publish it. This is going to be one of the most important letters in the unpublished letters of Sean Gold. There was an article in the Hamodia, the English Hamodia. There's a woman by the name of Varda Littman who writes about different places in Yerushalayim. She's been working on writing about Rehov HaNeviim. Rehov HaNeviim is all history. What took place on that street, the homes, the people. So she writes about the visit of Kaiser Wilhelm in 1889. Das Kaiser ist kein Palestine gekommen. And Herzl had wanted to meet him, so he decided he's also going to Eretz Yisrael in the hope that he'll meet the Kaiser here. Now, they describe how there was a big open area on Rehov HaNeviim, and they had put up 70, 80 tents for the Kaiser and his entourage. Greatness was its nothing to do. So the article in Hamodia continues that Herzl desecrated the Shabbos. It was not called Shabbos in Yerushalayim HaKodesh in order to come to see the Kaiser on Rehov HaNeviim, and there was an uproar in the entire city. The city was just shaking, livid with anger. And I think it was Rav Shmuel Salant or some other hall of the city put him in Cheder. It was terrible. What a piece over there. I read it, and I'm livid with anger. Let me quote to you from Herzl's diary about that day. We got on the train in Jaffa. It was a very, very hot day. I wasn't feeling well, but we're going to Jerusalem. The train on the way was delayed. And as we are on our way, it becomes quite obvious that the train is going to arrive in after the Sabbath has already fallen. And we're all very upset about that. But there's nothing we can do. So we keep going. During that trip, I developed a fever. I was very, very ill. We arrived in the train station in Jerusalem, you know? The new fixed-up train station that they all have Shabbos at, right? Herzl gets off the train on watch. He says that I would gladly have taken a ride to my hotel, but that's not what we did. I was very sick. I was burning with fever, and two of my aides, one held one hand and the other held the other hand, and I had my cane in my hand. He was in his late 30s, and we walked from the station all the way to the hotel. End of entry into the diary. So I sent this off to Hamodia. I quoted from Hamodia, then I quoted from the diary. And I simply said, pray tell me, what's the truth? Do you know? I haven't heard from them.
Wow.
Do you know, so far, they haven't published my article. I was at one point thinking of signing Toby Willig or Ira Nozenchuk at the bottom, but you know, if you'd seen my name, a classic example, absolute falsehood, and there's so much falsehood that has been passed for 100 years as being the absolute truth. Two people stand about out above all others and have been beschmutzed, besmirched, Herzl and Rav Kook. And it's all a lie about both of them. And in the passage of time, you know, we'll start getting more courage, you know. It's about time I start becoming courageous. We'll have more to say about that. All right. How did I get to that? Moshe Rabbeinu cried when he saw the pain of his fellow Jews. So he struck the Mitzri, struck the great blow. Let's go to the next slide. Let's take a look at number 5 first, on the right hand side, down at the bottom. Number 5 is the Tzava Kabbalah. He saw an Ish Mitzri striking Ish Ivni Me'echav. What a creative pshat, he says. He's probably right. He saw the Egyptian striking a Hebrew Me'echav from his brothers. Mi ben shar echav shahayu betocham v'imahem umitocham le'enehem lekocho v'hito. You know what it means? He took a Jew from amongst his brothers. There were 100 Jews standing there. There were 200 Jews standing there. And the Mitzri points and says, "You! Come here!" And he begins to beat him. And all the rest are standing there frozen. From amongst his brothers, he chose one. And Moshe Rabbeinu was watching the scene. Nobody's doing anything. These 200 Jews could trample this Mitzri to death. They're paralyzed with fear. They can't speak out. They can't do anything. Mi ben shar echav, he took one from amongst the others. Shahayu betocham. V'imahem, he was with them and in their midst, this Jew. Umitocham, and from them, le'enehem, before their very eyes. Lekachu v'iku, he took him and he struck him. V'yitem ko v'cho, Moshe turned here and there. Choshav Moshe, she'echav me'echav, ha'ivrim ha'ondim svivo yitkomem ala mitzri. He thought to himself that certainly one of the people standing there is going to rise up against this Mitzri. V'yatzil et achav hamukeh makas mavas, to save his brother who's being beaten to death. And he doesn't understand. V'yaki enish, he saw there's no man, rosh ein b'neim geva v'guvrin, there's no man amongst men. I don't think I agree with him at this point. It seems he's saying that nobody cares to save the fellow Jew. I'm not ready to say nobody cares. Nobody's capable. They're downtrodden. They're frightened. All courage has been torn out of them. That's a little different reading than the Tzava Kabbalah. The Kol, the King Isa, the Rabbah, so it is in the Medrash Rabbah. Rabbi Yeshua, Vayar Kien Ish, Sheyikaneh HaKadosh Baruch Hu V'Yehargen, Rabbi Yeshua says, he saw there wasn't a single man there who can be zealous for God and kill this Mitzri. Milas Ish, the word Ish, is always Torah. It's a description of an Adam Chosh, of an important man. Kemo halo Ish ato, ובזהית יעשב מה שתעוררו המפורשים על ייתור לושם ואיפן חוב וחוב. Now we understand why it said he turned here and there. The midik siv ayarkeish, once he saw that there is no man, yadano shepono chol v'chol. The pasuk had said, it says two things in the pasuk. Vayifen chol v'chol, he turned here and there, and he saw ki ein ish, that there is no man. Now, if he saw that ein ish, that means vayifen, it's all the same. Vayarkeish, yadano shepono chol v'chol, it seems like a repetition. ויפה כל וכל, ויקה, גם על השמיל הלא נופל כל כך משהו, ויער ויותר, ויער לא אומר כי אין רואה. That there's nobody who sees. So what he wants to say is that ויפה כל וכל is not to see if there's anybody there. If there's any man there who can stand up on behalf of the fellow Jew. He seems to leave the impression that they didn't care. I don't think he really means that. Not they didn't care. They couldn't. They couldn't. They'd been beaten down. They had lost their ability to fight back. Let's take a look at the Netziv, number six. By the way, there is one discussion in the Mepharshim that maybe because I'm a child of my times, I don't understand it. There's a discussion, did he have a right to kill the Mitzri? Was the Mitzri Chayev Misa? I don't know, I have difficulty with this. What are you supposed to do? He's beating him. Am I supposed to know that he's beating him just to hurt him a little bit, maybe a little bit more? Do I know at what moment there may be a blow that's going to kill him? Or do I wait? Do I wait and see? And he killed him? Then he can't do it. I mean, obviously, there's a din in Torah of Rodef. If you see Reuven pursuing Shimon, you have a responsibility to stop Reuven. You don't have to ask Reuven. Reuven, do you intend to kill Shimon? How do you plan on doing it? Well, you know what? You have to stop a crime from being committed. So you killed him. I don't have to understand everything. But there's no question about it. Moshe had the right to do what he did. All right. The Netziv.
The pasuk started by saying Vayehi Bayomim Ahem. So he says Vayehi Bayomim Ahem means he started a process of going out day by day. This is not really the first day that he went out. Those days he was going out, he knew he had learned that he was Jewish. He must only knew that he was Jewish from the very start. His mother was the one who was nursing him. He knew. They told him who he was and what he was, and he wanted to acquaint himself with his brothers. If it would have been a one-time thing, the Netziv said it should have said in the Torah, Vayehi Bayom Ahu, that day. No, it's not a that day. He's been going out day after day. Vayetze Elechom, he went out to his brothers. Lo Ksiv, it doesn't say Vayetze Moshe, Vayar B'Siv Lo Techav. It's amazing. This one pasuk that begins the great career of Moshe, or presents to us Moshe is dissected word by word, because it everything depends on how we see him at the first step that he takes. Vayetze Elechom, it doesn't say Vayetze Moshe and Moshe went down Vayar and he saw the Sivlat Echom Ela,
Bolandenu, Vayetze Elecha, he went out to his brothers. This comes to tell us, Shaloya Dar Kolatzet Min Apaltin Ubeit Yudo Bechachmot Achel Echav Yatza. He didn't spend his time walking through the streets and the highways and byways of Mitzrayim. He went out for only one purpose, El Echav. So now we're ready. We have one meaning. The Vayetze itself tells us that he's stepping out of one world into a completely different world, and he knows that he's taking that big step, But he goes out for only one purpose, El Echav, to his brothers. Vayarbis the old town, and he saw their suffering. His stakel harbe the open hasivla shahoya. Lo letaplis avodas hamelach. You know what he saw in their travails and sufferings? He saw that there's no practical purpose whatsoever. They hadn't been put to work in order to accomplish something. He saw that it's just plain torture. It's not for the purpose of serving the king. Only in order to torture them. Uberabo Yisan Mebeshabit says, the Mashmot Vayar, Shoyu Miyashin Lehen, Sivlo, saying that the word Vayar, and this fits in beautifully with what we said from Rasul Abedin, Vayar means that he assisted them with their burdens. He went over and helped the Jew carry, helped another one dig. Vayar b'sivotam, because the word vayar doesn't simply mean he's standing there like that. Oh, very interesting. He's not just looking. He's looking to do. He's looking to help. V'imkein peirush vayar, shero eitzo l'sivotam ma'asot. Vayar means that he saw what there is that he can do about their burdens. Vayar ish itzri, ish mitzri, so ish mitzri, biyom echad ro'od. And the Tzid doesn't want you to think that he walked out, and there it is, halt. Walks out, and that's it. Sees a mitzri, kills it. No. There's been a process over here. He has been going out to his brothers for a while. He's been assisting them with their, and then one day, of those many days that it may have been, that it may be a long period of time during which he's been going out and he's been assisting his brothers. One day, he saw something else. Maka Ishivdi, he's reading the pasuk so carefully. The pasuk is telling us that he's striking this person for only one reason, because he's a Jew. Not because he's lazy in his work or he isn't doing his work well. He struck him lo bishvil eze atzlus v'chadome, because he was lazy or something like that. El bishvil shu ivri, because he's a Hebrew. And then, what strikes Moshe? Avalu me'echav. He's one of his brothers. Vayifin ko v'cho. He was looking for all sorts of ways by which he could file a complaint against this mitzri for what he was doing. But there was nobody to talk to. He was hoping that somebody would bomb the rail lines. But nobody wants to do anything. No, sir. There's no soul here. Vayar ki enishi, saw that there's no man lahagid l'fonav eto. Avel, there's nobody you can tell about what's happening over here. Ki kulam atzedet bogen v'sonei Yisrael. They are all a community of traitors who hate Israel. They're anti-Semites. Today, if you call, you call the worst Sonei Yisrael, you call them an anti-Semite. These Jews, they're always calling everybody anti-Semites. We care about this, we care about that. We care about the suffering of the Palestinians. You're an apartheid state. Vayachat ha-mitzri, v'makom she'en sham ish, ishtadel hu lehiyot ish.
Here, the Netziv quotes the great statement from Pirkei Avos. He saw there's nobody to depend on. If so, the job is his. He has to do it. And he does it. Let's take a look a little bit at the Malbim. Okay. You know what? I'm going to read through it. That's all. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of anybody. You know, it's a long piece. We'll do as much as we can. And you know, it's Hashem. There are weeks coming up, more weeks, as long as there's no snowstorm next week. Okay. But Yigdal Hayeled. That was the pasuk before it all started. It says that he grew up. It was divine providence. Shagam Achas Shagodel. Shekvar Ovra Chemlo Sheorer Libalav Ve'et Shematzahal To'azov U'mushlach V'kolze L'kocho Oto L'ben. He's saying that the daughter of Paro, even after he grew up, and that kind of compassion that you have for a little baby has passed already. He's not a little baby. He's already getting into all the drawers, and he's a terror in the house, and he's grown up a little bit, and he even has a mind of his own. He's not a coochie-coochie-coo little, you know, cooing kid. That's when she takes him to be her son. It had nothing to do. It had nothing to do with the fact that he was a cute little baby. It was divine providence. She endowed the Beit Melech. He should grow up in the house of the king. He learned all of the wisdom of Egypt. And what he developed in that house was the strong start heart of the mighty. Ki Palton was one of the members of the palace of the king. Because his Giyach Hashem, the real Hashem was, he didn't forget his people. He knew exactly who he was. So Yishkach Amo Umal Adato, he shouldn't forget his people and his birth, where he came from. The Masha Kodosh Shemo Moshe, Shemazkit, Shemishato, Tomen Amai Moshe, that she drew him out of the water. Ukfar Kosov Philo HaYehudi wrote, Philo. Shahyab Alexandria, the made by Jamie, he was Alexandria, the famous Philo. The Sefer Chaye Moshe, he wrote in a book that he called The Life of Moshe, Sheshem Moshe Murkav Min Mu, Shuhumayim, Belashon Mitzvi, Mo is water in Egyptian, Gemo Moi, Belashon Arami, Umin removing something, removed from the water. The Shem Zemeid al Mikre Zeh, Bein Blashon Mitzri, Bein Blashon Ed. He says what's fascinating is the name Moshe, both in Hebrew and in Egyptian, really mean the same thing. That he was drawn, taken out of the water. The Chen Kosov, HaYosef and Bekadmonio, Josephus wrote it in the in his Sefer Kamiya, Sefer Bet, Perek Tet. You won't get up, it's all there. By the day Zeh Nechak Belibo Tomid Shehu Mizera B'nei Temuta V'chein Yadu Ko Yisrael Yehu Yehudi. He goes, he says one thing over here that's very, very significant, but that will lead for another one. He said that he knew that he is a human being of flesh and blood. That's an extremely important point that he's making. Now, he was never raised with any kind of ideas that he may be a some kind of a Superman. And he also knew, and all of Israel knew, that he was Jewish. Now, what's important over here is, if so, now I have connections, so don't say anything about Pasha Vayera.
is coming, Shalas is Va'era. And right before Moshe begins his task to tell old Pharaoh, let my people go, we are told that Yaakov had 12 children, and we're told the children of Reuven, the children of Shimon, the children of Levi, till we come to Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. A genealogy right plump there in the middle of Parsha Vayera. And Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch makes a fascinating comment on that. He says what Torah wants to make clear once and for all and forever, making no mistake, Moshe Rabbeinu was a man of flesh and blood. He wasn't the illegitimate son of God. He didn't come from the Holy Ghost. He wasn't born in a manger in Bethlehem on the night of the 24th to the 25th of December. He was a human being. But he was the greatest of human beings. And to make certain about it all, Torah tells us he had a brother, he had a sister, he had uncles, he had aunts, he had cousins. He's flesh and blood. The Meshech Chachma also goes through in his major introduction to Sefer Shemot to make it absolutely clear that Moshe Rabbeinu was a human being. We never make any mistake about it, because you have beings of people who do make mistakes like that, you understand? Do make mistakes like that. He's also saying it. He's a Ben Tuta. He's going to achieve unbelievable greatness. And that's why the Rambam says that anybody can be like Moshe Rabbeinu. Very important Yuletide message, you understand, that comes in there it comes in Parsha Prayer. It's very important. I'll tell you, I can't help it. Sometimes I have to digress. There's a plan afoot in this country. In Nazareth, in Rio de Janeiro, they have a statue of Yeshu that is, I don't know how many meters high. And there's a group that plans on building a statue of Yeshu in Eretz Yisrael taller than the one in Rio de Janeiro. And they have even gotten sort of the blessings of Uzi Landau, the Tsar Tayarut, I'm not sure what it is. I sent off a letter to him 2 days ago to show you Shemayim. You're out of your mind? This country is going to have the most towering statue of Yeshu. How many Jews were killed throughout history because of it?
Yeah.
I mean, Jews, and Uzi Landau is one of the better guys, you know?
Right.
I don't know, this is going to keep me busy for quite a while now. You have something important to say? I can't hear what you're saying. You have to come over here and say it.
That the Minister of
Tourism is giving free transportation. Yes, louder.
Is giving free transportation to the goyim to go back and forth from the 24th to the 25th to Bethlehem, and for free. And yet on Yom Kippur Rachel Imenu, we have to pay for the buses to go there, and this is our country.
Well, are you going to do anything about it, or are you just going to tell me what you read in the Jerusalem Post? I think that you should make sure that we get free transportation to Kibbutz Rachel, you understand?
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, I agree with you. We have to make this country more Jewish, it's our responsibility. Now I'm waiting to see what Uzi Landau is going to answer me on that letter. It's just a few words in an album. And he has to make that point. He's a Ben to Mutavis, Moshe Rabbeinu. He's going to go up to heaven and he's going to come down. He's going to speak with God, but he's a man. Who was it? Oh, yeah, I was talking with my friend, Dr. Banchek, Dr. Victor Banchek. He was my roommate in Eretz Yisrael. He wrote a book some years ago. And some Christian groups were fascinated by his book, because toward the end of the book, he writes one paragraph about the fact that Mohammed and Yeshua never sinned, never made a mistake. And you know what? Our Moshe Rabbeinu made mistakes, and he was condemned for them. And he was even not permitted into Eretz Yisrael because of that. Isn't that a refreshing thought? And they felt that it was a very refreshing thought. I get a little unnerved. I get this feeling that sometimes there are some people, Gedolei Yisrael can't make a mistake. What do you think? I can't make a mistake. There's only one person in this world who can't make a mistake. The Pope can't make a mistake. The Hav Lel Falfe Alof Mavolos Moshe Rabbeinu can. Moshe is Ben to Mutar, a human being. That's what the Malvim says. And that's what Shamshon Lefroy Hirsch says is the whole point of the genealogy in Parsha Feira. He's a human being. We have another few minutes. This Moshe Rabbeinu is going to go on for a few weeks now, so just better batten down the hatches and we'll make our way through it. Let's go. Vayikam Moshe, Vayetzi Alev, another piece will do. Moshe grew up and he went out to his brothers. Yisaper, the Pasuk is telling us, Mitzitkas Moshe, the piety of Moshe, the Echmina Urav. He already had all of those advantages or the traits that brought him the great kavod of being the one who gave Torah to the Jewish people and took them out of Egypt. Shagam shegadal the Beit Melech. Though he grew up in the house of the king, the Yisrael hoyuaz betachlus hashifus. And Israel then had reached the very lowest of depths. Lo hisdir panav mehem. He didn't hide his face from them. V'yotzar lehem, and he went out to them. Mitzad she'emecha, because they're his brothers. We've known others
who didn't want to have much to do with their fellow Jews because they were embarrassed of them. They weren't the so-called elite of German Jewry that were embarrassed by the sight of those Ostjuden, the Jews from the East. Not Moshe Rabbeinu. And he says that he watched this. He didn't conceal himself from them and went out to them because they're his brothers. Hey, Bakmi, Teva Ha'anoshim, the opposite of the nature of people, Shabalo Talmud, the Dulam, when they rise to greatness, Yidrachakume Achayim, they want to stay as far away as they can from their brothers, Ha'anim V'yonim, the poor and downtrodden, they want nothing to do with them. They're living in a different strata, not Moshe Rabbeinu. And Zot Shemid, there's a second thing, Shabalo Bisiklotam. He saw their suffering. Haimu, shehipit al zebra, ein chemlo, vilipo, olav tavoy. He looked with an eye of compassion, and his heart suffered. I believe the Malbim over here is trying to explain pshat in the Rashi. Rashi said, nosam ein of vilipo. His eye and his heart. He placed his eye and his heart. The eye of compassion, and his heart suffered. The next major area we're going to talk about is these two words,
eye and heart appear in the very first Rashi in Parashat Vayechi. In Parashat Vayechi it says that Yaakov lived in Mitzrayim 17 years. Rashi asks, Loma Parashat Zu Stuma. Why is Parashat Vayechi closed? Meaning that from the end of Parashat Vayigash to Parashat Vayechi, there is absolutely no pause or space in the Torah. And Rashi says the following great words, that because when Yaakov Avinu died, Nistemu Einehem V'Libam Shel Yisrael Min Hashibud, the eyes and the heart of the Jewish people were closed. They couldn't see, they couldn't feel, because of the enslavement. It's been now 100 years, 200 years. Finally, one Jew appears upon the scene whose eye and heart is working. The dramatic change for the Jewish people begins the day that Moshe Rabbeinu goes out there. And the eye and the heart that was closed with the death of Yaakov, there's now one Jew whose eye and heart is awake, is aroused, is beating in unison with them. That's step one in the process of redemption. There's a lot more to come. But I mean, this is it for today. This is it for today. Have a wonderful week.
Should we keep the sheets for next week?
No, I'll tell you, I trust myself to make, if you promise me you'll bring it back next week, otherwise I'm going to have to make a whole new set. Bring it, anybody who feels they can bring it back, bring it back. Take it on, bring it back, study it.
I don't know.
Just, no, don't be afraid. Come around.
What?
See the screen. Put your hand on the screen.
Yeah. And move it in.
Yeah, okay.